Hello and welcome to Blair and Barker. Yeah, there's nothing like watching Barker and Beer.
No, not Barker.
You didn't see. Yeah, it was me.
No. You trying to add up.
Well,
there's
bad. There's nothing like.
Yeah, carry the one. Nine for 70, though. Well, 16 Ks.
We were trying to figure out the level of suck we've seen so far this year from Alejandro Kirk, Isaiah Kiner-Falefic, Kevin Kiermaier, and Dalton Varsho.
What'd you come up with?
Well, now,
it ain't going to be right.
Shut up. I'm trying to add. God.
He screwed it up like three times already.
No, I didn't. Okay, so that's 76 at bats. And we're talking this is great radio and TV. 2, 6, 9, 10?
Yeah, you know, who cares? They're 30th in baseball on average.
Yeah, that's true.
As a team. So, who cares?
If you're wondering.
It's a little for a lot.
Yeah, if you're wondering, the Jays lost 8-0 to Houston last night. Feast or famine continues.
Oof.
With this team. They've got the day off today before they go into Yankee Stadium for the Yankees home opener. An old friend, Marcus Stroman's going to be in the mound. I'm sure we talked about this in Blue Jays talk yesterday, Kevin. I'm willing to bet Marcus. I think it's an off day for the Yankees, isn't it? I'm willing to bet he's in the bullpen right now.
Change up.
Learning a change up.
How you feel that,
Kevin? These suckers can't hit a change up to save their life.
Yeah, I don't know if it's can't. Can't's a strong word.
Haven't.
That's a better word. Yeah, look, I think the adjustments, obviously, can they make them? That's I think this is where we're at with this. We've basically, this has been happening since June of last year. And only thing you've added is a dude that plays third a lot who has trouble hitting. And, you know, the cleanup hitter's pretty good. Like, he's going to do his thing. But he needs to do more of his thing with runners on base. And for whatever reason, the adjustments have just been hard to come by. And that's the big question is, can they make adjustments? Like, can they buy into something and just be a tougher out? Be the guy that you get me out one way, I'll guarantee you the next time you ain't going to do that. And we just haven't consistently seen that. So what would make you think they can do it, Jeff?
Because they got an offensive coordinator this year.
Oh.
3-4 the Jays are. And folks, my 5-5 is looking... Oh, my 5-5 is a call for
That's
this road trip's looking pretty.
Might be a stretch.
I'm optimistic. They're going to be
5-5. 2 out of 3
They're
in Yankee Stadium.
They're going to take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees.
Okay.
They're going to take Kikuchi pitch as well at Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I
it's
optimistic
new
today.
Adding and optimistic.
What? Adding and optimistic.
Yeah.
I had a run today. Maybe it's the endorphins. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyhow, 8-0. The Blue Jays lost to the Astros last night. They are 3-4. You know, they were no hit. They were no hit in the first game of the series. Davis Schneider won it for them with a 2-run home run in the second game. Then he didn't start yesterday against Christian Javier. Kevin and I seem to be the only ones on the planet that weren't surprised by that. But
yeah, I didn't say it was smart. I said, I'm not surprised.
No, because we know that right-hander on the mound, you know that the Jays are going to use their lefties. I'm sure there are numbers to back that up. It makes sense, you know, playing the percentages and all this, but Barker, this is one of the few times I've actually, cause you're not big in the whole chemistry, yada, yada, et cetera thing. Wisely so, because it's irrelevant. You know, unless everybody hates each other, in which case it becomes relevant.
It happens.
Sure it does.
Yeah. I've been in those clubhouses before.
We've been in rooms.
Oh, well, we've been hating each other for like 7 years now.
At least 7 years. What was I talking about? I lost my train of thought.
Schneider not playing.
Oh, Schneider putting
the khakis overthinking it.
Yeah, Schneider. But your point was, you know, sometimes Davis Schneider's had 2 starts this year.
Yeah,
he's hit 2 home runs.
Yeah, and 8 at bats.
Yeah. Your team is doing jack
nothing.
Nothing. You got a guy who just won a game for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes maybe we talked about Bruce Bochy's old rule. You hit a home run, you're in the lineup for me the next day. I don't know about that, but sometimes maybe you ought to just say, you know what? Why don't you guys go upstairs and, like, you know, clean the laptops or something like that? And we're going to put Davis Schneider.
I wonder when he'll ever play. Jeff, who doesn't throw an elevated fastball? Marcus Stroman don't throw an elevated fastball. Marcus Stroman's good enough to pitch the weaknesses. He knows if a guy can't hit an elevated fastball, you're going to throw it up. When's he ever going to play? Like, who doesn't throw elevated fastballs anymore? Javier was throwing them yesterday. Like, they were 90. Like, it wasn't like they were 99. I mean, you got a better chance of getting a head out on 90 than you do 99 on an elevated fastball. I just don't understand it. All you have to do is go and say they're 30th in average at 176. They're 12th in homers. They're 22nd in RBIs. They're 23rd in runs. They're 26th in hits. They're 27th in slug. I have a dude that has more RBIs than Vladimir Guerrero Jr., with about, what, 17 less at-bats. Do you think I shouldn't be putting him in the lineup? Once in a while, but go outside the box. I get it, you got to have plans. Sometimes plans change.
I'm kind of conflicted here because...
And by the way, nobody gets hits off of Javier. Like, he doesn't give up a ton of hits. So you know what that means? A bloop and a bomb. Boy, this dude's got bat speed, and he hits bombs.
And
give him a chance to do it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying he's an everyday player, but I'm saying occasionally when your lineup's not real good, and it's not real good right now, you got to shake things up a little bit, and don't overthink it, and do things that's right in front of you.
Christian Javier was not. He was not.
Even more reason. He throws all speed stuff down.
Yeah.
What's David Schneider hit? Stuff down. That's all I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying he's Babe Ruth. But see, give him a chance.
Here's where I come down on this, though. Sometimes you shouldn't screw around with the story. Sometimes you shouldn't. I don't know about going with your gut anymore. I don't think managers are allowed to use their gut anymore necessarily. I've said, though, that I always, one of the things I really want from my managers, I want consistency. I want consistency of approach. And I find it hard to criticize a manager for not doing something that he's done throughout his career, something that other managers would do. I mean, the Jays aren't the only organization that have ever done this, and I guarantee you they won't be the only organization to do it going forward. There's something to be said for consistency. You know, Dalton Varsho's not real good right now. Kevin Kiermaier's not real good right now. Isaiah kind of fell off.
Can I ask you a question?
But the point is,
it's not a good point.
It is.
No,
in the long run, mm-hmm. you're going to need Dalton Varsho more than you're going to need David Schneider.
They're in win mode now. Like John, Snyder doesn't know his offense is not real good. Like you don't think he knows that, but he does know a guy in 8 at bats got 2 homers and just hit one of the best closers, took him way up to left field. Facing a right-hander who likes to throw breaking balls. This guy throws breaking balls down or off-speed stuff down. Yeah. Give him a chance. Occasionally, you got to do that. And I got to ask a question. You think anybody in the clubhouse, everybody seems to think that's a big thing. I'm not one of those people. But you think anybody in that clubhouse would have been chapped if David Schneider was in the lineup? Because he just hit a home run off doesn't give up a ton of home runs on one of the nastiest pitches in baseball? Absolutely not. Because it's called winning.
Okay, but
it's called putting your best lineup on the field, no matter what day it is. That's all.
Well,
I'm not saying do it all the time, but occasionally things are right in front of you. And when you overthink them, you get one hit.
I mean,
that's normally what happens. That's all.
Yeah, I mean,
you think IKF would be chapped if David Schneider, I'm not saying he plays third, but if he was playing third, you think he'd be mad?
I think Dalton.
No, it makes sense.
I think Dalton Varsho would be interested in why he wasn't in the lineup.
I could show him numbers to tell him probably, right now this dude's got 2 homers. He gives us a better chance of winning the baseball game.
It goes against everything you tell players, though. It goes against everything, small sample size, early in the season, we're not going to panic. To me,
conversation.
Part of me's playing devil's advocate here. I'm just saying that it didn't surprise me. I would have been shocked if David Schneider was in the lineup.
The talk in spring training was us against the world. Well, when us sometimes is doing better than some other us's, you put them in the lineup. Like, sometimes it's too simple. It's like moving around in the batter's box.
Sometimes
you got to make it obvious.
You got a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of these things.
No question.
And they're telling you.
Elevated 91-mile-an-hour fastball by a bunch of people. Well, what about the breaking balls he throws down? Guy loves breaking balls. That's all. I'm not saying do it all the time.
All right. There's another number you threw out yesterday. And the Jays are 30th in average. We talked about, the number of strikeouts, double plays. They finally got a stolen base yesterday. We all got to see a hit and run put on that Kevin Kiermaier ended up stealing second. But, I mean, there was just nothing going on there. Kevin, they have had 36 at-bats with runners in scoring position in seven games.
Even more reason to put a guy in the lineup who hits home.
But I'm saying, Kevin, that's five at-bats.
Yeah, it's not great.
With runners in scoring position per game. And again, congratulations, Ronel Blanco. Framber Valdez, going to get paid.
It's yeah, great. It's one of the best teams in the American League.
They have yet to face. Seven games, they've faced one elite starting pitcher.
Yeah, it's almost like they've never seen a changeup before.
And they're going to get more of it because, we talked about it.
There's some good pitchers in baseball.
There's some good pitchers. And people are throwing that now.
Yeah.
There's a change happening in the game. We talked about the Boston Red Sox. Brian Bayo made a start for them and didn't throw a four-seamer.
He's got a really good changeup, though. I think to your point, the adjustments for the team need to be made. Like, can you continue to run out Alejandro Kirk every single time the game starts? Like, he's made six starts behind the plate in seven games. Are they watching the same game that everybody else is watching?
Yeah, you want to see
the best offense out of Alejandro Kirk? You can't play him every day. Like, it just is not working. Yeah. Like, you can see him trying to generate bat speed. I don't know if he's tired. Who knows if he's tired? But his bat looks slow. Maybe it's because they play him too much. I mean, if you have to play somebody else until Danny Jansen gets back to see the best Kirky you can possibly see, because offensively your lineup right now is all over the place. And I got another question. Why is Vladdy over swinging? Vladdy ain't been around long enough to know that, occasionally just have good direction with your shoulders and try and play pepper with the outfield fence and right center. Try that occasionally.
I don't understand it. I will tell you this. I just don't know what Vladdy is. I've written that and I've said it, and I don't mean that as a pejorative. I just don't know what he is. I know what I hope he is. I know what I think he can be.
I thought he was a 30-100 guy.
I just don't.
30-100 guys don't look like this consistently. Like it's real easy to get him out.
This is because we had a caller in Blue Jays talk yesterday. Made a great point. He said, "This isn't."
Tall's been great, by the way.
This isn't seven games. This is a 170 game sample size, because this is basically 2023.
It's been since June, basically. You go back and look at the numbers since June. It's been a rocky road for the lineup. Why that is, who knows? Like, it's adjustments that the pitchers have made, the khakis on the other team have made. You're not being able to combat that and make your own adjustments, or you just can't make them.
They're being out-cackified. Maybe
they can't make adjustments. Maybe we're giving them, I think they're too good of a lineup, too smart of a lineup, and should be able to, on the fly, make an adjustment in an at-bat. Like, if I take a giant hard swing and falling off towards the third base side on a changeup, I'm taking telling myself, oh, that didn't work. Maybe I should tone it down a little, get started a little sooner, stay within my lower half, and just try and play pepper with something in the outfield. Try that on for size. Like, don't do the same thing over and over again. It's very confusing. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit.
We are going to be joined by Casey Kandel, manager of the Buffalo Bisons, who earned his 200th win as manager on April 2nd. Get some thoughts from him on Yariel Rodriguez.
I think anybody got hit down
and Ricky Tiedemann. We'll find out. We're also going to go to the back leg line today, 416-413-3959. That is your opportunity to leave questions, comments, recipes. For Kevin, Doug Glanville, MLB ESPN analyst.
I think he wants to take your
co-host of the Starkville podcast, joins us at 3 o'clock to explain why the hell he picked the Blue Jays to win the World Series. And Mike Stanton, Houston Astros TV analyst and Believe in the Bronx podcast, will join us. We'll talk about that. This is perfect. We'll talk about the Astros and we'll talk about the Yankees. We'll look ahead. All right, a reminder that tomorrow's an afternoon game. It is a 1:07 first pitch. We are going to be doing Blue Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet TV network and radio network following the game. So we're going to be taking your texts. If we like your texts, we'll throw them up on the TV. And we're going to be taking calls at 416-413-3959, the back leg line, which is great because you can call us up in the middle of the game if you see something you don't like. and holler while you're angry. So you won't have time to, I mean, it's great. It's great. You won't have time to decompress. So 416-413-3959 is the back leg line. Use it during the game tomorrow. And if we like your call, we'll play it on TV and you can tell your folks, hey, tune into Blue Jays talk. My ass was on TV with Blair and Barker.
Nice.
Chris Bassett. Yordan Alvarez is really, really good, and Yordan Alvarez owns Chris Bassett.
Yeah.
Why is that? What is it about that pitcher-hitter matchup?
Well, he's an elite offensive player. That's the first thing, right?
Right.
And when you're trying, I said this to you, the quality of swing counts.
This was a great point.
Yeah, it's basically okay. You're putting the hitter on the defense or you're putting the pitcher on the defense. Mm-hmm. It's like 0-0 is a big deal. Instead of 1-0 or 0-1, depending on which side is on the defense. It's like whenever you see Chris Bassett before he gave up the home run to Yordan Alvarez, he wanted to pound the 1-1 sinker on the corner to get ahead. Now he's got an elite offensive player thinking he can do anything, right? It's the elevated cutter in.
That was a good hitter in a hitter's count.
But yeah, well, basically now I can think, well, he's probably not going to come in with that. He'll probably come away. I can cheat a little bit. I can step out over the plate. I can get my arms extended, and I can hit a home run to right center instead of me, you know, slapping a ball to left for a single. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. And just the quality in his first two starts and the swing counts just haven't been there. And the sinker command hasn't been real good, right? What's the sinker? The sinker is they're hitting 353 off his sinker. That's not good. Like, his best pitch is his sinker. It sets up a plethora of quadrants and speeds and locations that he's trying to do. And you could tell he did everything yesterday except throw that thing underhanded. Like, that's you could see it, like, out there. It's just like, I know what my offense is not doing. I know how I'm feeling, which is obviously not great. I know what I'm trying to do to get all these guys out. For whatever reason, that ball just ain't going there. Now it's search mode. Like, you're just, you know, you're fighting it. Like, he started out the game in the stretch. He never does that. It's just because he's trying to get in the flow and you know, set his lanes and throw the ball where he wants it to go. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's, he's a good pitcher. He'll figure these things out, but it's just intriguing to watch him face guys that, you know, have success against him and how he's trying to get them out. And, you know, and on top of it, his lineup's not hitting, which, you know, every pitch is like the seventh game of the World Series in his second start of the season, which is not the easiest thing to do, and it didn't work out for him.
You made a point after his first start that you thought he was searching for a little bit of velo, you know, still kind of in that just early after spring training mode. And we should, Mark Boffo, our producer, points out that last year he had a 7.63 ERA after his three starts in 2023, and then, of course, he went on to have a terrific year. You know, post a 1.18.
Too many balls down the middle and exit velocities go whoop, way up. And
yeah,
because you throw 91, you get hammered. That's sort of been what's happening.
So he's,
he'll figure it out because he's really, really smart. But he needs to figure that sinker out in a hurry.
Right.
Both sides of the plate, he can elevate it. You know what he does with it. And he finds that everything else will take care of itself.
Well, we mentioned that Casey Kandel, the manager of the Buffalo Bisons, earned his 200th win as Bisons manager. In extra innings, as a matter of fact. The Bisons, and this is probably, Kevin, as someone who played in that part of the world.
Don't remind me.
You probably know, or you're probably not surprised to know, that the Bisons were scheduled to take the mound today against the Worcester Red Sox.
Whoa.
The game was postponed due to weather. Which has worked to our benefit because it allows us to bring in Casey Kandel, manager of the Buffalo Bisons. Casey, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the 200th win.
Thank you.
You know, we spent a lot of time in spring training, and I know you were down to spring training, but we spent a lot of time in spring training hearing about, you know, different approaches, and Don Mattingly's got more of a say, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just wondering, is there a when an organization does something like that, is there a trickle down at the AAA level? You know, and I guess what I mean by that, is there a uniform hitting philosophy at every level of this organization? And if there is, how different is it than, you know, what you were doing last year?
I think it's just I think for the most part the tools to get to the swing that you want to get to are kind of, you know, the same everywhere, but have different ways of teaching. And then you have to look at each individual hitter and see how he gets to where he gets to be successful. And I think that's what basically our organizational, you know, process is looking at each hitter individually and not basically saying one particular formula is going to work for everybody, but kind of, you know, having a basic foundation and then working off of that. I think that's, I mean, we've done that, you know, in the past and doing it again. And you just hear, it's good to hear different thoughts and different processes by different people. In the end, you know, players make their own decisions about how they feel they're going to be successful. And I think that's how they have to do it. And that's where you find the most success, I think.
Casey, early in the season, you know, sometimes not about performance, especially in cold weather. I played in that league that you're in. It's something else. Like, you know, using a couple pair of batting gloves. I can remember doing that. Like you using somebody else's bat that you didn't like. If you broke it, it didn't really matter. Like I used to do that all the time, you know, because I was bigger than most of them guys and I picked on them a little bit. And it's kind of fun, right, when you're a veteran guy and you've been around forever. But when you're a teacher, a manager, and you're paying attention and it's not so much about the results – this early in the season, what is it about? Is it just because I've always been intrigued about how, you know, staffs look at guys that are up and coming and it's not always about results. What do you look for?
Perseverance and adjustment and being able to grind through this adversity, which is the weather early, you know. And I think, I mean, having played just same as you as played in this league, I mean, it was about, okay, I can't complain. This is what it's going to be. And I had to go and make it through each game and play to the best of my ability and not really consider the results, you know, what kind of player I am. Because it's going to change because it just happens. When it warms up, guys, it changes. And it is a battle to get through it. I mean, but, you know, nobody is, you know, complained about the weather. We have had some pretty severe stuff already. So, you know, that's a good sign.
Casey, if somebody asked you to define what an adjustment at the plate as an individual means to you, what would you say?
I would say having a way to get through that day when you don't have your best swing. And if you feel like, you know, I don't feel as good as I usually feel. And today I'm going to have to just maybe battle and, you know, just try and get barrel on the ball and put the ball in play hard somewhere, not really pick pitches out because I don't feel good enough. I just want to try and get something that I can handle and put in play hard. I mean, I think, you know, when you face different pitchers and you sometimes you feel, okay, I can maybe take a shot at this guy and do some damage, or, you know, I'm facing somebody that's pretty good and who's on and their stuff is pretty good today that I'm going to have to make an adjustment and take what they give me, kind of, you know, pull it back a little bit.
Yep. Yariel Rodriguez made his AAA debut on Tuesday, 4 innings, 6 strikeouts, no runs, no hits. You know, the reports that the Jays got and the reports they gave us were they were raving about what they saw initially. What's your read on him? And, you know, this is a guy that pitched in Japan. He's, you know, he didn't pitch much last year. Where is he compared to other pitchers on the Bison staff right now?
I mean, he used all of his pitches. He can throw them all for strikes. He's very confident on the mound. He has a good idea trying to do with hitters. You know, it's not just throwing, he's pitching. And it was very impressive to watch him work. I watched him actually throw like a live BP and then this. And it's been, both of them have been very, very impressive. It's not to say that, you know, he's going to go out and do what he did, you know, his last outing every time, but he knows what he's doing. And you can tell he's a veteran who's pitched in at a high level. And he doesn't just go out and he's not guessing. He has an idea of what he's doing. He has, I think, maybe 4 or 5 pitch mix, and he uses them all very well. And he can throw them all for strikes, and then he can throw them strike the ball when he needs to.
Casey, is there any plan?
It was impressive.
Absolutely. He's got great stuff. Is there any plan to calm him down, like all the stuff that goes on before he actually releases the baseball? I know I talked to Pete Walker in spring training, and there was some concern about strike one and, you know, being efficient with strike three. And it's sort of, mm-hmm. you know, in turn, a lot of has to do with all that stuff that goes on before he releases the ball. Is there any plan of sort of trying to calm that down, or that's later on in the season they'll figure it out? You know, maybe if he goes to the big leagues, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's hard to, you know, have a player that's pitched at his level that has had success to, you know, get them to change. I mean, and I don't blame players for that because, you know, that's the way they're doing it. Now, if they're receptive to that and they feel they need to do it, then, you know, they'll make an adjustment that way. And if that's what they feel, that will help them. That would be something if I've always felt if your guy has success all the way to the big leagues and they're at the big league level and he's doing the things that he needs to do to be successful, then it's hard to get him to change. I know pitchers will make adjustments to get themselves better, and I think he's that kind of guy. You know, if you about things, he is receptive to that and would be receptive to it. So I think that's probably something that's maybe a little bit down the line.
One player, one pitcher we'd like to ask you about, Ricky Tiedemann, who I know he was supposed to start today against mm-hmm. the Woo Sox. I love that name. Mm-hmm. And Addison Barger.
Yeah. Ricky, his first outing was good a little bit erratic, but his stuff was good. It was crisp. He was, you know, his velo was up and, I think his slider wasn't as sharp as it usually is, but he's got a great changeup that I think he's learning is going to be a big weapon in his arsenal, and he's starting to use that more, which is I think is a good thing. And you know, he's a competitor and he's young and he's energetic and he's driven to do well. So I think, you know, I think there's a lot of upside. And I'm sure he's gonna progress very well. And then as for Addy Barger, he's come back with a different kind of view of what he's trying to accomplish this year. I've talked to him a little bit about it. He kind of toned down his goals, which were high and lofty last year, and he was disappointed himself a little bit. And he came back with a different attitude about, you know, I'm going to go out and play the game, and I'm going to not expect, you know, more than I can give and just play the game the way that I know how. And he's from spring training on to now, to this point, he has been a different player from last year. And he's very impressive. He's impressed me a lot this year with his attitude and his maturity. So,
Casey, as always, it's great to talk to you. We really appreciate it. Stay warm. Which I think I can say that right now. Yeah, good luck is
good
right.
Luck. Yeah.
Congratulations on number 200, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I only have about 2,300 more to catch the guy who's in first.
Well, I don't know if you really want to do that, though. Isn't that like, I always bug Barker about where he stands in the Louisville Bats home run leaders. Yeah. He says, you don't want to go there.
You know.
I don't know if you want to be that guy. Not that I don't want you to have a long and happy life, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be about 95 years old, I think, by the time I got out of there.
That's awesome.
All right, Casey, be well,
see you
man.
Later. Right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Take
All
care.
Right.
All righty. Casey Candel, manager of the Buffalo Bison.
You can see why people love him.
I mean, I covered him when he was a player with the Montreal Expos, and he's just really good people. That's interesting. I looked over at you when he mentioned Addison Barger and talked about toning it down a bit, and you kind of smiled a little bit.
Yeah.
You've been there?
Not in the minor leagues. No. Minor leagues when I was young and full of it, basically. Mm-hmm. I had my expectations were off the charts. Like, mm-hmm. I was shooting for the moon, and most of the time I was living up to that. I ain't tooting my own horn, but it was... Yeah. Those were facts. Like, I was, you know, I had it going in the right direction. And I got the big leagues, and I got slapped in the face. I mean, that's basically what happened. So, you know, I think he's seen how it looks when you go and you face the elite guys and how they attack you and you know, how it looked when you go and you take the big giant hack and you got three of those. And, you know, sometimes I think you gotta sort of get slapped around a little bit for you to go home and look in the mirror and take, you know, take a longer look and make some adjustments. And I like it that he shoots for the moon. And I don't want him to stop doing it. He's a young enough guy. He's got enough talent to do that. Have the expectations that if I work harder, I can take it to the next level. See, I like that. I don't want if I were the manager, I wouldn't want my players.
I think but Casey's point maybe was that realization that it is, you know, a long season.
I think we need to know what the numbers were. You know, maybe he's thinking 40 and whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they were just too high.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, 20-80 would be a good season for him in the minor leagues. 20-80 and you know, have the tough at bat with traffic on the bases. Like, be, you know, do you have a 2-strike approach? You know, work on that. Be really good on averages against fastballs. Like, yeah. Do those kind of things, and then I think the numbers that you would want, you would be a little closer to him.
It was great talking to you. Yeah. I love talking to Casey Kendall. It always makes my day better. Not that it was a bad day to begin with, but it does make it better. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go to the back leg line. We've got calls from Thamesford, Ontario, Stratford, Ontario, Calgary, Vaughan. Got calls from all over the place. We'll get that next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Back leg cities.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Blair and Barker. For Thursday, it's an off day for the Blue Jays. They're not going to be no hit today. Marcus Stroman will be on the mound for the Yankees. Marcus Stroman will be in the mound for the Yankees tomorrow. No, I'm optimistic. They're going to take 2 or 3 from the Yankees. They're going to beat old Stroh tomorrow.
Yeah, he's got 15 pitches. Which one do you think they're going to look for? The wrong one? You don't throw one.
He does. As I said, I know that he's in the bullpen right now.
They look for it. They look for something you don't throw?
Anyhow. It's early. Keep the faith.
Early? You're that guy, huh?
No, I'm not that guy.
It's
June
of last year. It's past early.
We are approaching game number 170 of the 2023 season, as we said. 416-413-3959. That is the back leg line. Tomorrow, it is an afternoon game, weather permitting. And we will be on following the game, not just on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, but on Sportsnet on the TV side with Blue Jays Talk. And what you're going to do is you're going to want to call up. So you're going to call the back leg line tomorrow, 416-413-3959. Leave your best comment. We'll pick them. We'll have our highly skilled staff, but in point of fact, it'll probably be me doing it. We'll pick the questions, and you can use the text line, 590-590 as well, and we'll throw your text up there, and you can take part in the discussion.
Get it ready. Get the foot down early. It's coming.
Boom. Boom. That's what you call a drop in the radio business. Let's go to the back leg line today. Everett from Thamesford, Ontario.
Jeff, you made a great point the other day.
Thank
when you had Jim Bowden from The Athletic on. And it's one that I really hope you and the remainder of the Toronto media put some emphasis on. That is, have you ever seen a team with a top 10 payroll? I think the Jays are currently ranked 7th at $227 million. Have an offense that, simply put, is as putrid and ineffective as this one. And I get it's not our money, but putting the pitching staff aside, the inefficiency in dollar allocation across this roster is mind-boggling to me when you have a payroll at this level. There just isn't any bang for the buck. So my question is this. At what point does Rogers step in and put the pressure on Shapiro to make a change? And by that, I'm referring to Ross Atkins and his baseball operations team. We are at a point right now where this team is almost unwatchable, especially because this is just a continuation of last season. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Thanks, gents. Have a great day.
Yeah, listen, I said last year when the Jays were eliminated, and I got, you know, predictable reaction, but amongst all the things I was ranting about, one of the things I said is I thought ownership deserved better than what it was getting from the team. And of course, because I work at an outlet that's owned by the same owners that own the Blue Jays. People are going to go there. But I truly believe that. I'm old enough to remember when this team was owned by Interbrew. And the Rogers Center stunk back then. The team was awful. There were some concerns. I never bought into it, but there were concern in some quarters that, you know, it's at some point Innerbrew was going to want to get rid of the team. And, I mean, the Belgians, they had no interest in the Blue Jays. They had no interest at all in the Blue Jays. And there was a time where, yeah, the team wasn't in danger of moving, but there was a time where it was an open question as to who was eventually going to run this team. Well, that's not the case now. This team's floating a luxury or running a luxury tax payroll. Ownership has sunk a ton of money into refurbishing the stadium without going, you know, to the public coffers to get it done. It's basically rebuilt the entire spring training complex. And yeah, I mean, listen, I'm with you. Much as Jim Bowden said, Kevin, I look at this payroll and I don't want to necessarily harp on payroll because I've seen, I mean, David Sampson, we have David Sampson on. His Marlins team won a World Series with like the lowest payroll in baseball. And they beat the Yankees with the highest payroll in baseball. But yeah, I look at the amount of money ownership has kicked into this team. And yeah, I wonder why I haven't got a postseason win out of it. Absolutely I do. As to what that means, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
We said last night in Blue Jays talk, I thought somebody was going to pay for last year, especially after what we saw the year before. Last year's team finished with the worst record in the year before, the worst regular season record. We know what happened in the postseason.
The bottom line is the offense looks exactly like it looked last year. At the end of the season last year, when going into the season, Ross had an opportunity to shake things up a little. Now, we understand who they were trying to get, however you believe that was going to happen or not.
Well, that was it.
You have to try and pivot, yes. And you have to try and do a little bit better to help your lineup. And for me, they just didn't do enough. And absolutely,
I don't ever want to hear people hammer on ownership because they went after Shohei Ohtani. What the hell else do you want?
I don't think it's about that. I think it's about the product on the field.
I agree, but the point is, I'm tired. People say, well, they shouldn't have gone after him because it wasn't going to sign here anyhow. No credit for going after the guy? No credit for being prepared to give him $600 million or whatever it was?
I think it's more that you go for it, and IKF is what you bring back, and Kevin Kiermaier is what you bring back.
Well,
Justin Turner, yeah, that's a nice ad, but Justin Turner's not an aircraft carrier.
What free agent could they have added that would have made the lineup
better?
Tell me right now.
Another Justin Turner, somebody else to hit fifth. I don't know. That's not my job to decide. Somebody that knows how to hit.
The problem is, other than Shohei Ohtani, what this team needed to make itself better was only going to be available in trade. And they don't have the pieces to make that trade. They don't have the pieces to make a Juan Soto trade.
The fans of the Blue Jays don't want to hear that. They got a good enough team.
They don't want to hear it.
They made the playoffs. They want a better product. They want to compete
more. I'm not
more.
Arguing against that. But what I'm saying is, if you want to blame something, it's the fact that the minor league system doesn't have the type of players that you can use to put together a deal to get a guy like Juan Soto.
Fans of the team will roll their eyes at that and say the team's good enough because they've been making the playoffs, and it's the same old thing. It looks like Groundhog Day offensively because you didn't go out and fix it.
I just said, to fix it, you're going to have to trade to fix it. And you don't have the pieces to trade.
They keep telling us they got a bunch of smart people running this team. Get creative.
Ask you this. Who in this roster do you want to trade for?
Trade for?
You're another team. And, you know.
I don't know.
You're going to take Springer? No, you're not going to take Springer. You're not going to take Varsho. The pitchers are old and on multi-year contracts. Maybe you take Jose Barrios. That's a reflection on the front office and on the people who draft and scout as well. This minor league system's not good enough. I can't put it any other way. They're not.
Hmm. Yeah.
They're not good enough to make a deal for a guy like Juan Soto. And other than Ohtani, they could have gone out. I guess they could have gone out and signed Cody Bellinger. I don't think Cody Bellinger ever wanted to come here. And that's one of the problems you're dealing with free agents, is you get down to human beings, and it's entirely possible that guys would rather go to San Diego or Chicago than Toronto because they're human beings. This team needed to be in a position to make a significant trade to address the weaknesses in this lineup. And I hate to say this now, because at the time I looked back at the deal and I understood, and I wrote this today on Sportsnet.ca, I understood why they traded Gurriel and Moreno at the time, because they weren't going to re-sign Gurriel, and Moreno, you know, was not going to be, he was not going to be their number one catcher as long as Jansen and Kirk were here. It just wasn't. So I understood why that deal was made at the time. But looking back now,
it's an awful trade.
You need those guys. You need guys like that to make a trade for Juan Soto.
You put Lourdes and Teoscar in this lineup now.
Teoscar, though, again, throw that out there. We know why Teoscar isn't back. He was going to walk as a free agent. Teoscar was not going to be here this year.
Yeah, I don't think he wanted to walk. I think the relationship between the two parties just wasn't there. I think that's what it was.
Anyhow, that was a good discussion. But no, I completely understand. I completely understand.
You can understand why a fan would be throwing their hands in the air with what they were in, you know, looking forward to of Ohtani maybe being in a uniform and in what they got now and how it looks. And anyway, yeah, it's sometimes.
I keep getting back to it, though. And you have to at least give me credit for this. The end of last year, I was saying, you know what I do? I go and trade for Juan Soto. I trade for Juan Soto for 1 year because if I'm not better this year, I may not be around. If I'm in this front office and I'm not better this year, it may not matter if I trade away guys who, you know, who could have helped me the year before, and I'm just, or a year later, and I'm just buying Juan Soto for 1 year because I need to win this year. Juan Soto gives me a better chance of winning.
Well, you better hope Vladdy does something.
Andrew from Stratford, Ontario.
Andrew.
This past off season, the decision this front office took basically to stand pat and return this core was, for the most part, chalked up to the fact that whatever offensive challenges they have could be rationalized by the fact that there was this set of, I don't know, unrelated individual offensive regressions that occurred up and down the lineup, and that it was such a rogue event and such an outlier that it couldn't help but be corrected in a new season. I don't think there's anything that blows that theory apart faster than being no hit in the fifth game, and then the manager comes out and says, well, no, wait, tonight was an outlier. And then 2 games later, that same lineup is one hit. At a certain point, isn't someone going to have to stand up like an adult and not talk about what this lineup should be and what we should all expect it to be and what, of course, it will eventually become, but what it is? Because I think we're seeing what the offensive character of this team is, and it's a 12-month-long sample.
Yeah,
I think Andrew. John almost lost a rim last year at the end of the season. He's not going to do that this year. Like, he's not going to stand up in front of Jeff Blair and or Kevin Barker on our show and say that the lineup's not good enough. We got no chance. That ain't happening. He almost lost the locker room. I mean, let's just not lie about it. Like, it's a fact.
Well,
like,
you know, we're now all over places. Now we're telling them. I mean, a lot of people are going to listen to this. They're not. They're going to say, well, where did this come from? Because we haven't really talked about this. But, I mean, there were – yeah.
I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to listen to the end of the season.
Yeah.
The way they talked about it and know that you got to, you know, you got to mend fences. And he believes.
Look, no hitters are outliers. You don't see a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a reason why it never happens this early in the season, though. Okay. This is why I'm asking you. How does anybody think it's going to get better?
Do you think at any point leading up to his start, Joe Espada, Dana Brown, and the Astros said,
"Well, we got him right where we want him."
You know what? Ronel Blanco is going to pitch a complete game in his first start this year, and he's going to do it in under 110 pitches. That's going to be a no hitter. I mean, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. But still, again, it's early. 3-4. It's early.
Okay.
No, it is early.
All right.
Don't ask me when it stops being early, but right now it's early. I'll let you know when I think it's
early. You think so?
Joe from London.
Hey, Joe.
Kevin, saw that Ronel Blanco no-hit the Blue Jays, and he pretty much did it by about a third of his pitches were change-ups, which a pitch that he's been working on for the last year. I'm wondering your thoughts on whether having Nate Pearson develop a changeup to go with his fastball and slider might be a way of making him a more effective middle reliever, or perhaps even a closer. Thanks, Kevin.
It's a great question, actually.
Until he said closer.
Yeah, but I mean, his point is we've heard that Nate Pearson was throwing a split.
He's trying.
A split-fingered pitch.
Yeah.
He's trying to throw a split
finger. Rip it and rip it.
And let's be clear, if Nate Pearson is going to have an impact in this organization, frankly, if Nate Pearson is going to have a major league career, it's going to be as a reliever. I mean, I think that's pretty
obvious. Batters are hitting 400 off his fastball. I think you got to start there with Nate. Can he locate a fastball to a good hitter? Can you get a lefty out? What would you throw a good lefty? What are you throwing? I mean, we got to start there first. Like, I understand, and I want the best for Nate, too. He's a good kid. Like, he, you know, and his body type, man, we're praying. Like, we want it to happen, and just imagining how that would look if he could put it all together and turn out to be the thing that we all think he can be. But what's he – even a good right-handed here, what's he throwing him? You seen the slider? Mm. I mean, the slider was better last year, but if he wants to. For me, I think it starts with fastball command. Could he go to quadrants with a fastball and locate it? Not down the middle, not upper third, not inner third, not outer third. I'm going black away to a good right-handed hitter. I'm going up and in on the black to a good left-handed hitter. Can he do that? That's what you got to ask yourself.
I want to squeeze this question in. Steven from Calgary.
I was watching the game yesterday, hoping for some measure of hope. There it was. Alvarez hits the ball. Springer corrals it quickly and throws a strike to the relay man, who throws a strike to the plate, where if we had anyone at the plate, the momentum of the ball would have made the tag. Instead, we have Kirk lollygagging 15 feet in front, oblivious to the runner, who scores a second or two after he catches the throw. Or am I just being too harsh? Love your show. Goodbye.
I'm trying to think back to that play at the time. It didn't occur
I think
to me
he's that. Talking about maybe Tucker scoring from first, or is it somebody scored from first on the Alvarez double?
On the Alvarez double, maybe.
I think that's what he's talking about.
I don't remember at the time whether or not I didn't make a note of that.
This is what I think. I'm in the camp Kirky plays too much. I think there's too big of a sample size that will tell you performance-wise when they are telling you that what they want is the best out of every single player. I think from the All-Star break until now, when he's shown you that he has to play a lot behind the plate, he's not always a really good player. And I just don't think they can afford right now to have that from him. And I think they need to adapt and overcome. And if you have to place somebody behind the plate that you don't want to play a lot to get the best out of Alejandro Kirk, that's what you have to do. Offensively, are you wishing he runs to the plate with the dude on second? Not me. I mean, I know he's hitting 400, but with runners in scoring position, but it's the at-bats that it just looks like when he plays 6 days out of seven behind the plate and has, 49 innings behind the plate, the bat looks like it's underwater. I don't think they can afford right now to have that look that way. And the only way you're not going to have it look that way, in my mind, because the body type is back off a little bit, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, sometimes you just got a big pitcher say, you know what, it's just not working. Like, maybe we take a little step back and got to play serving a couple more games than you wanted to. Man, he's not going to kill you back there. He can call a good game. He's a good blocker. I mean, if he gets a hit, hey, more power to you. To get the best out of Alejandro Kirk, I think it would benefit everybody. Take a step back. May not want to, but you didn't like that, did you?
Yeah, I mean, you know how I feel. Doug Glanville is ESPN's MLB analyst, co-host of the Starkville podcast. He said the Jays are going to win the World Series.
Maybe they will.
Doug, you got to explain. You will next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet. 590 The Fan at Sportsnet.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
to turn the mic on. Still fired up after that last segment.
Oh, you're good.
Got me exorcised in that last segment.
Passion, Jeff.
Passion. Passion that unites us. The Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays have today off.
It could be Oakland.
It could be Oakland. The Jays have today off, and they will be in the Bronx tomorrow for the home opener against the Yankees, the first game of a three-game series. Our friend Marcus Stroman will be on the mound for the Yankees, and I'm sure he'll be a little focused.
Yeah,
going into that game, I would say. I had the Blue Jays going to the playoffs this year.
Me too. I still did.
Didn't have them going to the World Series. Damn sure didn't have them winning the World Series. Doug Glanville, ESPN's MLB analyst, co-host of the Starkville podcast, who will also be on ESPN Radio Sunday Night Baseball broadcast this Sunday, Astros and Rangers. He had the Jays as his World Series champion. And we're very pleased that he joins us. And I'm not going to ask you, because it is early, if you would like a redo on that. But, well, actually, I am, Doug. Would you like redo on that pick?
Oh, I just dive in and just, that's it. I make my predictions and I just go ride the wave, whatever it may be and wherever it takes you.
What did you see in this team, though? Because you made a point in you know, explaining the selection, the fact that, yes, you know, the Vladdy and Bo, they've got a good young core. And let's face it, I mean, I think a lot of people have felt they've been on the cusp for a while, and that this may, in fact, be the last year window of opportunity. What did you see beyond that, though, that allowed you to have the confidence to make this pick?
Well, you know, part of it is not so much seeing that this is the trajectory it's going on, but knowing that it's a little bit of a stars aligning factor, right? You know that there's a lot of talented teams, and you know when you watch a team finally kind of punch the ticket and win it, a lot of things just have to fall into place. And some of that is just being healthy. Mm-hmm. Some of it is just having the best years you could have. Some of it is making moves to get these veterans. And then the surprise stories of young, you know, talent that just come up and are world beaters, at least for that year. And every time I look at the Blue Jays, I see, like, gosh, it's like a storm that's swirling. And if this, like, kind of just comes together, you do get the perfect storm, because you can see, and you look at the paper and you look at the talent, you say, well, they could have frontline starters. they need help in their bullpen, but certainly they had matchups that could work. You look at the lineup and you just see, wow, I mean, Dalton, Varsho, you see like talent through and through, that it's not just like, oh, they're good, versus like, wow, these guys could be all-stars in the right, you know, having the right kind of year. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. kind of sums that up for me, because he, you know, he's coming, you know, you see him working out in the offseason, you're like, yeah, this is his year. And he has a big spring training, whatever it is. And you feel like, yes, this guy wants to be great. The only thing that stands in his way sometimes is maybe he presses a little bit, or maybe he just gets a little bit ahead of himself. But that's part of youth. And so I just see it as a, you know, the coalescing of what is already there in terms of the ingredients of a champion team, and all the pieces just coming together at the right time.
Doug, as a young team, well, they're not young anymore, but as a lineup early in the season, how hard is it just to take a deep breath? And, you know, when you're getting off to a slow start as an entire lineup.
When you've been no hit.
Yeah, and then one hit. How is it hard just to take a step back and go, okay, stop over swinging, you get your pitch, stay in the big part of the field? I know it sounds easy for me and Jeff to come on here and, you know, everybody's sitting on their couch going, well, why can't you do it that way? But you've been, you know, in the trenches early in the season. Expectations are high, especially when you got a new approach team-wide. You know, we're swinging at pitches we can only do damage on. Is it hard to do that? Is it hard when you get off to a slow start to just take a step back, take a deep breath, get in the batter's box, get a good pitch to hit, free and easy, don't overswing? Is that hard to do?
It is hard to do. And what I'm also counting on is, you're a little bit older, right? The core, you talk about Bichette, you just get a little bit older, and it does get easier to do that. I think the challenge sometimes is when you get to the place, maybe you're more of a veteran, but you're not guaranteed, right? You're not guaranteed the contract, you're scrapping. You may not have the time or the bandwidth granted to you to be able to get out of slumps. I mean, the biggest difference often between a guy that could have this bad year and a guy that could have a great year, sometimes it just comes down to opportunity. If the team gives up on you in June and starts sitting you, you can't get out of that slump, right? But a lot of times players can find ways because they're saying, no, we believe in you. We're going to push this through. And so being able to have that vision and being young enough, but at the same time, enough experience to know, like, yeah, we've been here before. We've struggled. You know, we may be last in hitting right now in batting average or something like that. Mm-hmm. However, we're 3-4, right? Or we're, you know, yeah, we're right there. We're still right there. we're playing like our worst baseball. And we're not like, oh, and whatever, right? We're still there. So you get perspective, I think, and that comes with experience and time. And that's where you need, you know, the leadership, the coaches, the manager, the veteran players, the George Springers, whoever, to kind of take that deep breath with you.
Doug, they're getting a lot of changeups. Explain to me how you hit a changeup.
Whoa, I didn't love a changeup.
Me either.
I think there's a lot of that going around.
A lot of hitting is like, you know, it's like getting into a consistent position, whatever the pitch is, and sort of like, you know, that period where you kind of have that foot down and then you're identifying. And these great hitters can kind of give themselves such a good margin for error that they can kind of still hit the fastball, still be on time for other pitches, slower pitches. Certainly, it's really hard to do, and certainly hard to do consistently. When you get a little jumpy, you always hear like ahead of the fastball, behind the breaking ball, that space you get into. So there's no doubt you're always trying to fine-tune and calibrate that timing mechanism. But it has a lot to do with like identifying it and getting that foot down. But when you're down, you know, you're in good position with your hands. You still have something left to fire with. And that is hard because you get two out in front of it, you're absolutely done.
Yeah, one of the things Buck Martinez said in a recent Blue Jays telecast was, you know, he thinks that we're seeing a trend in baseball now towards more pitches lower in the zone, away from the high fastball. You know, I think your friend Jason Stark and other people have talked about how the Boston Red Sox, Andrew Bailey, is essentially, you know, it's not, he doesn't want you to throw a four-seam fastball, but they're stressing other things. They're stressing off-speed pitches, which he did with the Giants. Are we seeing, do you think, a long-term trend here, or is this just one of those early things and that eventually when the season gets going, we're going to see the game go back to the way it was last year?
Well, the interesting thing is for all of eternity, it seemed like it was all about pitching down in the zone.
Right.
Down, down, down. And, you know, because a lot of right-handed batters did not have that low swing plane. It just wasn't maybe Mike Trout, a couple of guys like that. For the most part, that was the pitch that you relied on. And even if they hit it, you hit it into the ground. So I don't think it's changed much in the sense of that's probably still true. The ground ball rate is always something that teams look to make sure that they are, even if it's hard hit contact, it's in the ground, you're minimizing the damage. Now, the risk in going up in the zone, strategically, yes, you have to pick your spots, but that's a mistake that gets hit and can get hit really hard. But with velocity now, pitchers are like, oh, I'm throwing 100, good luck in getting on top of this. I think in the end, a lot of times, you know, that low pitch still is a tough pitch to hit to drive for power. Maybe left-handers a little bit more, but for the most part, that's a tough pitch. And you add velocity and movement to it, that pitchers today, max effort, good movement, cutters, sinkers, sliders, you know, slurves, everything you want to throw at them. And that pitcher who's in the game is matched up just for you because he's only in there for three batters or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah, then you might reset around going down in the zone. I didn't like the low pitch, so I wish they did throw it up in the zone. I would have made my living off of that.
Doug, are the Yankees for real?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even pick the Yankees, but once again, I went very rogue in some ways. I said, you know what, we got to just throw something out. Padres, I have them going deep into the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, hey, you know, there's talent. You certainly can justify it, but the Yankees have Juan Soto, and he's an X factor. This is a generational talent, and you know, he's gotten off to a good start. He's had a little slow starts and hasn't gotten off really well lately. And I think he's the wild card to be able to kind of gain the confidence to be able to judge. And then if they get Cole back sometime at some point, then you kind of, you know, you get an acquisition to your starting rotation, who's a Cy Young Award winner, by simply getting healthy. That's a huge asset, because then you don't have to trade for that asset. And they're going to be good, but that whole division is good. That's the thing. That's what's tough about it. That whole division, you could say they could win. They could win. They are that good right now. So Yankees are looking really good right now, though.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's almost as if I wouldn't say we forgot how good Juan Soto was, but man, I don't know. Maybe we did. You know, maybe we did. And he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year at an awfully young age. I was thinking about that watching him in spring training. He hit that home run against the Jays off the scoreboard, and I was like, I almost forgot how good he was. I almost forgot how good this guy is. And you're right, he's a generational hitter. He's a generational hitter.
He really is. And you talk about being able to identify ball and strike. I mean, that, and it's not just like, it's one thing to know the zone, it's another thing to know your zone. We're way more comfortable as hitters to know our zone. I mean, a high ball hitter, I'm in this. Okay, I'm going to attack that pitch. But it's another thing that either aligns with the zone, or you have such good vision that you can discern. This guy is next level and always been. And I asked him about it in the playoffs last year. I said, did you always have this skill set? Like, where does it come from? And he said, look, I did work at it a little bit too. I used to just be able to pick it up really quickly. But he also had just a certain vision to go with that sort of ability to put in the work. But on base all the time, just put a people mover from home to just roll out an escalator to first with him up. I mean, that's what he does. But he also, you're seeing now how good a hitter he is, the power in all fields, putting it all together.
Doug, we found out today that the Marlins, that Yuri Perez is going to undergo Tommy John surgery. I know Jeff Passan kind of wrote this as well. You know, he said, look, we kind of, guys have Tommy John surgery all the time. We kind of shrug. But this is a guy who's 20 years old. He's a guy that the Marlins, they kind of put him on a path to avoid Tommy John surgery, right? That this was a deliberate, we are going to try to keep this guy as healthy as long as possible. And now he's undergoing Tommy John surgery. And we've seen, of course, pitchers get injured in spring training as well. I always ask, there's a lot of money in this game. And I always ask, why doesn't baseball do a study, like a serious study of this situation? I know you were involved in the Players Association when you were a player as well. Like, has anybody ever talked about that? Like, let's really try to figure out what the hell's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, there's more to be done. I went to high school in my hometown of Teaneck, New Jersey, and one of my teachers, Mrs. Fleissig, is the mother of Glenn Fleissig, who does a lot of these studies work with. And so there is information out there, but maybe like you said, to the level where everybody kind of gets on board and sees the common interest in keeping everybody as healthy as possible. You start to feel like it's like knee injuries in football, right? Or something along those lines. Like, there's an inevitability when you're talking about the craft of pitching, right? It's a little bit of an unnatural motion, to say the least. You have max effort going on all the time. They're specialized, they're coming in, throwing 100, and that's it. You throw as hard as you can for as long as you can. It's different priorities than when, say, the 80s or 90s, where you had pitchers that could, Dave Steeb or, guys like that, that just can give you the 240 innings. They paced themselves. They had a certain way, to address their fatigue. So it's different. It's a different game. And the movement is just off the charts as well. That's just, max effort, arm. I'd like to see more of the science behind it, because there's clearly concerns throughout baseball about like how short the life expectancy is of pitchers before they get that first Tommy John. It seems to be shrinking.
Doug, do you like the way where baseball's at now? Do you think it's an easy watch? The stolen base is coming back, the hard thrower, it's a quicker game. The pace is where I think they want it to be. I think it's a little bit more fun to watch. Do you think that?
I enjoy it. I'm enjoying baseball. I mean, those of us who love the game, and no matter what, you definitely have that feeling of, you know what, I'm going to enjoy this no matter what happens. And this is the game. This is what I appreciate. And it's going to have its evolution and changes, but the tempo, it's important, you know, just to keep the game moving. I mean, I noticed just calling games, just how you can depend on the rhythm. That's the difference. You can mm-hmm. depend on the rhythm. You know, it's going to be 3 hours or less. You just, before it was like, anything could happen. Anything could slow this game down, not just because it was 13 to 12, because of things that were in the players in control that just slow it down, you know? That just didn't seem like a sustainable trajectory. So I like it. I like the base stealing. I like the action. I like the, you know, more balls in play. They're still working on that to a certain degree. But when it is in play, there's not 12 guys on one side of the field. You know, I do like the visuals, the tradition that's sort of hearkening back, and the fact that they're moving things along much more quickly.
Yeah, that's I'm going to borrow that line about being able to depend on the rhythm, because that sums it up. That's exactly how I feel watching the game now. And yeah, I'm with both of you guys. I think the sport's in a great
predictable,
place.
Predictable, I think too, which is
it's just a little bit. Yeah. It's the baseball I grew up watching. I know. Yeah. What can I say? It's the baseball I grew up watching, and I like it.
Yeah.
Doug, really good of you to join us, my friend. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Doug.
Be well.
My pleasure. Great to see you guys.
Take care. It's Doug Glanville, MLB analyst with ESPN, co-host of the Starkville podcast. You got to listen to the Starkville podcast. Doug Glanville and Jason Stark did the interview they did with Joe Maddon about Shohei Ohtani and his relationship with his translator. Joe Maddon managed Shohei Ohtani for a long time. If you want to understand fully the situation surrounding Shohei Ohtani, you absolutely need to listen to the podcast. It's the Starkville podcast. It was, it explains a lot. We all still have questions about it, but I listened to that podcast and I came away with answers to two really important questions, two questions I needed to know about it. And I will tell you this, you listen to that podcast, you come away feeling better about Shohei Ohtani.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know if that's...
You were feeling bad about him?
No, but I don't like... No, what I mean is that I'm a skeptic. I covered baseball during steroids. I know what it... You know, I know what it was like to be accused of turning a blind eye and not paying attention to things. And in some ways, you know, I always defend myself by saying, I asked guys if they were on steroids. I had guys lie to me.
Yeah.
To my face.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do any more than that. I can't take their urine sample and get it tested. I asked guys that I still consider friends, if you use steroids. I go, JB, I'd never use steroids.
Oh.
Well, guess what? I'm a skeptic about this. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire thing. I know there's nothing connecting Shohei Ohtani to illegal gambling, which at the end of the day is what this is going to come down to. But like a lot of people,
but you're hoping not. That's me.
But
anyway.
like a lot of people, yeah. I don't care how close you are to me. I'm not giving you the right to yank $4.5 million out of my bank account. There was some stuff that was said that I was skeptical about.
Yeah.
Listen to this podcast. Joe Maddon was there. Joe Maddon dealt with Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter. And as I said, I came away from that podcast thinking, okay, I got a better understanding of why this happened the way it happened. Anyhow, great question about the game and asking Doug if he liked where the game is. Because I saw something in spring training during the futures game, whatever it was, the prospects games, whatever they call it. And I wanted to ask you about this, and I didn't get around to it. I became a fan of the in-game challenge, watching those games, allowing the hitter or the catcher to challenge a strike. I didn't want to because I don't like a lot of instant replay or video replay intruding on the game. How do you feel about it? Because I watched it and I thought, you know what? I'm kind of okay with this because it's quick.
How do you know who's going to use it?
Well,
that's the thing, right? What inning would you use it in? And would it be important to use it early in the game, middle of the game, late in the game?
Can you imagine if in the third inning you used it, and then in the ninth inning, Vladdy comes up with the bases loaded, gets called out in a borderline pitch, and you have no challenge?
So that part of it, I'm not sure you know, you're going to start making other people in your organization bad because the wrong person's using it. Like, how do you – we had Casey on, Kendall on, and that was the thing, right? It was you were
– Well, he said
the wrong
people
were using it too many times. Like,
he talked about that last year, and he said it also slowed the game down.
I think it's about getting it right.
Yeah.
In certain situations, but I just don't know when that situation would be. How important is it early in the game?
I don't know how you would structure the catcher.
I don't either.
The catcher, I would presume the catcher would be the person.
Are
to
you
call.
In agreement that you never use it? I mean, if I hit in the bottom of the order, am I using it? Yeah. It's like, who uses it? When do they use it? How much do they use it? Like,
the only thing I wondered about, and I should have asked Casey this, because I can't remember where it was one of those games I was watching. It might have even been the game involving the Padres minor leaguers. But the point was made that one of the people were asking this question, okay, how would you use this? And the thought was that a specific player, and we're talking about the hitters now, the pitching thing, you can give it to the catcher.
Yeah.
But that hitters... it would be the responsibility of the bench coach to say to a guy, like if we're in the fourth inning or whatever, and things are, you know, hey, if you get up there and there's a borderline pitch, use your challenge, use the challenge. And I think that's probably where it would have to go. You know, you're going up to the plate. It's the sixth inning. We've been no hit.
The sixth inning's different the third inning IKF using it. Like, that's different.
Yeah, obviously. But yeah. That's what I'm saying. I would like to think if you're the bench coach, you're not going to say to IKF, hey, it's the third inning. If you get a borderline pitch, use it. But do you say it to Vladdy?
Yeah, I don't know.
Two on?
That's the thing, right? And you know, if I'm the player and you're giving another player the option and you don't give it to me,
tough.
That's not tough.
But the question, but the point is here is, you're not giving it to a certain player. It's based on the situation. Hey, if you're IKF and you're coming up with the bases loaded,
that's different.
Let me finish. If you're IKF and you're coming up with the bases loaded in the fourth or fifth inning, and you've got four challenges a game, maybe that's when you use it.
Yeah, maybe. I guess
that's the thing. If you remove it, you can't go into the game saying, "Okay, only Vladdy does it today. Only Bo does it today. Only Turner does it today." But if you make it. If you tell the players before each at bat that it's on.
Even if you say, be careful, say the entire team's in a room, and you say, be careful when you use this.
You don't say that. That's the thing.
I mean, you sort of have to.
No, you're not. Because nobody uses it unless the bench coach tells them to use it.
Oh, well, I don't.
You may not use it.
The bench coach is not up there. I'm a heat of the moment. I'm not feeling right. It's right away. I'm used to it. Like that's it.
Well, then you know what? Then you know what happens. Then you're probably benched.
They don't bench anybody anymore.
It's a strategic thing. That there's a time to use it in a game. And yeah, the manager and the coach, look, we can look at every at bat of every game and tell you which at bat is a more valuable at bat to the team having a chance to win. I mean, you got winning percentages of every at-bat. There's a point in the game where it's important you can use it. You don't need to use it in the first inning regardless of what comes up. I think that's where it goes. I'm not saying you use it this
–
at-bat, but you say, hey, if there's a borderline pitch, you got the right to
challenge it. It's beneficial. I think you just got to be careful about how you talk about it and who you allow to do it and – That's those kind of things.
Pretty straightforward. There are games where it's situational.
Depends
it's
on how many you get to, right? You could mess a couple up and it's okay. Yeah. And then you feel a little bit more comfortable saying, hey.
But I like how fast it is. And we had Casey talking about how last year, the challenge, the scoreboard in center field shows a replay of the pitch with the box.
Yeah.
And the game
the box
on.
Is not actually what they use either, right? Umpires are using a different box. You need to see that. Yeah. Like, how do you know when to call? What's a ball and a strike?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. They're using it in the minors. And, you know, one thing about Rob Manfred, stuff that gets used in the minors eventually works its way up to the majors.
Yeah.
I was surprised because
I like it.
My initial reaction was, oh, God, I don't want any part of this.
It slows the game down. It's stopping the game. How dare you? It depends on how quickly they get the answer and those kind of things, which I'm assuming it would be quick, right? That's a ball.
Oh, it is. It's very quick.
Yeah, it's quick. No, it doesn't mess up any rhythm or timing or anything. So, yeah, I mean, just depends on how many you get.
And the that is the question. Yeah. But I think it's probably going to be here in some form. I mean, I tell you what, it's going to be here a lot faster than the electronic strike zone.
Because it's like every other pitch I'd be using it.
Well, you would, Mr. Good Teammate over here.
No, you know, relationship between me and the umpires was not always the greatest.
That would be something. The Blue Jays, Doug Glanville's World Series champion, Blue Jays have the day off.
He tucked me into it. Why not?
Have the day off. They will get back on the field tomorrow against the New York Yankees in the Yankees home opener. A reminder that we will be doing Blue Jays talk following the game on radio and TV. We will solicit text. You can use the text line, 590-590, and the back leg line, 416-413-3959. You can call in during the game and or right after the game. Leave your questions. And our highly skilled staff, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Our highly skilled staff will go through it and pick out the questions that
they do a great job.
We like, or ones that are certain to put me over the edge, in which case we'll probably go with those questions. But again, that's tomorrow following the Jays Yankees game. And of course, if you're in the East, you look outside right now, we do have to say weather permitting. Although the Yankees, the thing with the Yankees is they'll generally, they'll bang the home opener in the morning if the weather's going to suck. If they're going to get people out to the ballpark, they'll play the game.
Yeah.
They'll play the game. They have in the past. I mean, they used to be notorious for not, but in the Yankees have recently.
Day game in Yankee Stadium's pretty cool. I hope they play.
And you say Kikuchi pitches well at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, I hope they play. It'd be fun.
Marcus Stroman.
Yeah.
Fun to see Stroh against the Blue Jays.
And maybe it'll lock them in. That little short porch and right can do wonders for you. If you're a right-handed hitter, let the ball travel.
What, and you know what?
Maybe it's good for the Jays.
And you know what? You've had an off day, and it's Yankee Stadium, and it's going to be special.
Fingers crossed that happens.
Mike Stanton is the Houston Astros TV analyst. He's also host of the Believe in the Bronx podcast. It is a Yankees podcast. He's also a three-time World Series champion reliever. And Mike Stanton will join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kind of cool. I just noticed around. There's a ton of jerseys lying around here, right? Because the puckheads use the studio after us. There's one I might walk out with.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to fit you.
Oh, it'll fit me now.
Too small.
No, it's not.
It is. Not too
now.
Small.
No. The new improved.
My son could wear that.
The new improved Jeff Blair. That would fit.
Mediums everywhere.
That would fit. That's a nice. There's a couple of nice ones.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, buy your own. Get off your wallet. Nice. I mean, they've been laying over there for a year. Right,
jerseys,
look at them.
The jerseys are like $500.
Are they really? Oh, no, they're not.
$300.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Think of Jay's uniforms. That one right behind me? Yeah. It's like $150.
I got my eye on one.
They're $300, those?
Pretty much.
That's crazy.
I don't know. I've never bought one.
I'd take those in.
Today's an off day for the Toronto Blue Jays. They will be in the Bronx tomorrow afternoon for a 105 first pitch. Opening day, Yankees opening day. It'll be Yusei Kikuchi and Marcus Stroman. The rest of the matchups are as follows. Kevin Gausman against Clark Schmidt. And Sunday is Bowden Francis against Luis Gil. Again, we will be on the air tomorrow immediately following the Jays game on radio and TV with
nice.
Blue Jays talk. So
tune in,
check the weather forecast, and away we go. Mike Stanton is a Houston Astros TV analyst. He's also host of the Believe in the Bronx podcast. It is a Yankees podcast. No surprise. He's a three-time World Series champion with the Yankees. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Mike, thank you very much for joining us. We trust that you're doing well. I want to talk about the Yankees, but first I want to take a little look back at that series we just saw between the Astros and the Jays. I mean, a lot happened, and I guess if you're a Blue Jays fan, a lot didn't happen in that series. But I wanted to ask you about Chris Bassitt and Yordan Alvarez. Mm-hmm. Now, Yordan Alvarez, he is an elite. I get it. He's an elite hitter. I'm wondering, though, as a pitcher, when you know that a guy owns you, like he, when you know that he, you know, what was Pedro's line? He's your daddy. When you know that Yordan Alvarez is your daddy, or that the guy standing at the plate is your daddy, how do you handle that as a pitcher? What do you do?
Well, I think Chris is doing what he should do, which is just keep going after him. I mean, at some point, the odds have to turn in his favor. I mean, I don't think anybody with any substantial number of at bats has ever hit a thousand off of a pitcher. So it's just one of those crazy things that happens. I remember who was it? Bernie Williams owned the closer of the Twins to like seven or eight straight hits. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things. At one point, Bernie got on first base and he looked over the dugout, just kind of shrugged his shoulders, like, I don't know what's happening. Every time I swing the bat, I'm squaring it up. And it's just one of those things. You know, Yordan had not swung the bat very well this season, or he hadn't gotten very many hits. He had, mm-hmm. he had hit a few balls pretty hard, but just hadn't gotten any results. And you knew that day was coming. Well, I guess what he needed was Bassitt on the mound. But that's what I would do. I would just keep going unless it was a situation that dictated that, you know, I can't let this dude, you know, late in the game, I can't let this dude hurt me. You know, you just keep going after him, and eventually he's going to hit the ball at somebody or something. Well, at least you hope.
Yeah, and Craig, I think the book on him is throw four seamers up. That's the only pitch that Chris doesn't throw. It's a four seamer up,
right?
So
right.
Yeah, you're going to the mound, and the only thing I think it seemed to me like when he was walking around and pushing the button and shaking his head, I'm doing everything but underhanding this thing to him. Like I got nothing right. left. So it's funny how that is. But I want to ask you about the Astros. I heard Bregman say that winning is a habit. And I've never been on a team as good as the Astros, an organization where it's just consistently, they win all the time, right? It's if, you know, you start out 1-5, it just didn't seem like they really cared, right? They're running around like the bases like a little league team, and it just didn't seem to bother them. Like they're thinking, we'll figure this out because most of the time we're better than you are. How do you sort of get that start? Now, obviously, it's talent. But the shoe, I would think, will drop sooner than later in that clubhouse, in that organization. And it just seems like the players won't allow that to happen. How do you do that behind closed doors, Mike?
Well, I think most more than anything else is you just know how good your team is. And you know, you've been there, you've done that. That's where experience really comes into it. But I will tell you this, a team that struggles, even a really good team that struggles, there may not be panic, but there's still concern, mm-hmm. you know? You know, there are times, but I couldn't agree with Alex more that, you know, the old sign from The Natural, you know, losing is contagious, winning is contagious also. And when you come to the ballpark every day, just go and you're just saying, okay, how are we going to win today? I'm not sure, but we're going to win in one way or another. Just like you can do the same thing losing, you know, how are we going to lose this game today? You know, what's going to happen? And I think it's more just you're really on an even keel, whether you're high or you're low. You know, you're trying to stay on that flat path emotionally because you know that eventually things will change, that your talent is going to show up and you're going to start winning baseball games.
Have you heard what the Astros as a whole think about the lineup for the Blue Jays?
The lineup of the Blue Jays is a little bit of a head scratcher because they should be scoring runs. And listen, I mean, it's a small sample size. You're talking about a week. You know, you're not talking about, you know, a month or anything like that. But, you know, I do think that they underachieved last year. I do think that, they just haven't quite been as good as the talent says. And, you know, one of the dirtiest words in baseball, and it's not a four-letter word, but maybe we should kind of change the spelling and make it a four-letter word, is expectations.
Yeah.
you know, because of the talent level, because of the dudes that they have in that lineup, there are high expectations. And, you know, the problem with expectations is if you meet them, well, you're just doing what you're supposed to do. But if you don't, which is what usually happens because expectations are usually ridiculously high, now you're always an underachiever. And so, yeah, that's one of those things that, you know, when a team or a lineup or a player has high expectations, there's a lot of pressure on them to do what they're supposed to do. And if they don't, you're always going to look like, you know, you're not meeting your talent level.
Yeah.
Mike, I want to move on and talk about the Yankees a little bit. Marcus Stroman gets a start on opening day. Look, when the Yankees signed Marcus Stroman, I know there was a lot of debate in New York about it. I thought it was a great signing because I love Marcus in the spotlight. He's a durable dude. He's a good athlete. How do you think he's going to adapt to the Bronx?
I think he's going to be fine. I mean, I don't know Marcus at all. I've never met him. I've just, you know, do the same thing that everybody else does, read quotes from him. I do think that he may spend a little bit too much time on social media, you see this in certain players, and you mentioned Alex Bregman. Alex is one of these type players that plays with a chip, mm-hmm. you know, that plays with an attitude that, you know, what is Marcus? Marcus, does he have the best stuff? No. Is he the biggest dude? No. Is he the strongest dude? No. But you ask him, he is. And Bregman is the same way. And so when you have those guys, you know, the guy I equate to from my generation was Dustin Pedroia. You know, little second baseman, had a little bit of power, but the dude played like the Jolly Green Giant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what Marcus Stroman is. You know, where he sets himself apart from everyone else is his aggressiveness and his attitude.
Mike, the third most important offensive player for the Yankees is who?
The third.
Yeah.
Oh, I might have to say Anthony Rizzo.
Wow.
Okay, because number one, to tell you the truth, number one, I don't think it's Judge. Number one is Juan Soto.
Yep.
And he had an incredible series against the Astros. I think that was the move of the offseason for any team.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Dodgers getting Shohei. No, it's the Yankees getting Juan Soto, because I think he is a big lights type player. I think he is going to thrive in New York, and I think that the Yankees are going to do everything they can to keep him there, just simply because I thought kind of what happened in San Diego was he was in obscurity. Even though he was still a good player, you just didn't really talk about the Padres,
yeah.
You know, because they're the third team in California, or what, the fourth team or fifth? Yeah, fourth team in California. So I think that he goes to the bright lights of the Big Apple. I think he is going to have a monster season. And then obviously Judge. Then you have to put somebody behind Judge. And I think who may be the next player, it's not Giancarlo Stanton. It's DJ LeMahieu.
Mm-hmm.
If they can get DJ back and get DJ healthy, now you have two guys at the top of that lineup that are big-time on-base percentage guys. Now all of a sudden, Judge and Stanton, Rizzo and Glaber, all these dudes there's going to be runners all over the bases, and they have a shot of scoring a whole bunch of runs this year.
Do you think there's any way that if Juan Soto has success in New York, and I understand there are luxury tax implications and all this, but when he ended up there, my reaction, Mike, was the same as yours. I know he likes the bright lights. I felt guilty. I watched him in spring training hit a home run off the scoreboard, and I thought, man, I just forgot how good this guy was. And he's been around for so long, and I just, it's like slapping myself because I forgot how good he was. I don't see him being anything other than a Yankee. Like, I don't know how the money's going to work. I just don't, but I just think it's a perfect fit. And if he's at his age, if he signs like an 8 or 10 year deal with the Yankees, I don't know how you're going to be able to separate him and the Yankees after this year. I just don't.
Well, I mean, the thing you have to remember is that even when he becomes, you know, a mid-30s, late-30s player, the power's not there. You know, he's never been a great defensive player anyways, even though he did win a game here in Houston mm-hmm. with his arm. That was on opening day. I look at that. The one thing he's always going to be able to do, he's always going to be able to hit. He's always going to be able to walk. And I think that just makes him age gracefully, you know, because he's not a power hitter. He's just mm-hmm. a hitter that has power. But his eye at the plate is so elite that I think he'll always have that. But I think that, you know, his time in New York, and I think, you know, listen, they're going to roll out the red carpet. They're going to do everything they can to make him as happy as he possibly can. He's going to get the biggest ovation when he gets back, when they get back to New York. Well, are they opening tonight?
Tomorrow.
Whatever their home opener is. Tomorrow, yeah. Yeah. That's right. Today's an off day. So they're going to do everything they can. The fans are going to do everything they can. And I think I agree with you. It's just a match made in heaven that's going to be, it just makes sense for a player of that stature, the player of that, that skill level that he needs to be in the Bronx.
Mike, do you think we saw the Astros starting pitchers throwing righty on righty changeups? Been a while since we've seen that, right? It's odd to do that. And I started thinking about that, right? You go from evolving the elevated fastball, now the arm speed on the changeup, you're throwing it to both sides of the plate. Are organizations, in your mind, trying to bring the pitcher back?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope that they're getting – you know, we because Astros were one of the teams that really pushed the analytics extremely hard. And they're still one of the highest usage analytics team in baseball. But everybody's that way now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, listen, this is a copycat sport. When something works, everybody else is going to try it. Okay. Mm-hmm. You've seen big markets try this, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays, mottos. They've tried to incorporate those. And you see people, front office personnel from the Rays go all over the league because they're all trying to do the same thing. Doesn't work that way. But, you know, there is no information that one team has now that another team doesn't. So now you're looking for the new trend. But I do think that pitchability is coming back. I mean, what was it, 2 years ago was the first time in baseball history that there were more off-speed pitches thrown than fastballs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, where you have to establish the fastball. No, you don't. Spin it, because fastballs get hit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're seeing with the changeup. Ronel Blanco's changeup the other day was just nothing short of spectacular. And before that, he was I called him a one-and-a-half-pitch pitcher. He had a fastball and he had a slider, but he threw all sliders. So that was the only pitch that you know, you really had to sit on. The changeup was filthy. He located it. The arm speed was there. Righty, lefty, it doesn't matter. But you're right. I do think it's coming back. You know, what put Tom Glavine in the Hall of Fame was he started throwing his changeups to lefties also. Lefties used to own Tom. And he goes, that's my best pitch. Why would I not throw my best pitch?
Yeah.
Just because the guy's on the other side of the plate. And listen, it showed, you know, that the Blanco no-hitter showed that right-on-right changeup, if you locate it, it can be a devastating pitch.
Absolutely.
Hey, Mike, last question before you let you run, because I kind of let this slip by, but when you touched on Juan Soto, you've played in New York. How do you go about embracing the spotlight of New York if you're Juan Soto, but still be loved? You know what I mean? Because there's a way, you got to find a happy medium, right?
Sure. Well, first, you don't listen to even in, you know, when I was with the Yankees the first time, that was through, you know, the last dynasty. That was winning, you know, 3 World Series in a row, 4 out of 5, going to 6 out of 5 out of 6. I mean, you know, just a crazy run we were on. Yeah, you still and this is also before social media.
Right.
I think you have to keep the media at arm's length and not listen to the talk radio. You know, especially if you're having any kind of troubles, because they're going to bury you. It doesn't matter how good you are. But I think it's but the biggest thing is to make sure that he's loved, is there, he's accepted, is that whether you're going well or you're stinking it up, you have to make yourself available to the media.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have a job to do. And if you're available to the media, then, you know, when you're going well, when you're going bad, they'll cover for you.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to bury you. And that's something that I think a lot of the young players now don't understand is you know, talk about The Natural again, the movie The Natural. You know, the media is going to be there a lot longer than the players are going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that you have to, if you can embrace it, and not just accept it, but actually have fun with it, that's going to show. And the fans are going to react to that. Because a lot of how the fans react to a player is driven by the perception that the media gives the player, you know? And if, you know, when you're going well and you're, you know, it took Jim Rice till his 15th year to get into the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. The dude was an absolute beast. Why? Because he combated the media every single solitary day, and I think they held it against him.
Mike, really good of you to join us, man. Terrific insight.
That's
thanks
awesome.
So much.
Thanks, Mike.
Anytime, guys.
Be well. That is Mike Stanton, three-time World Series champion.
That's awesome.
The Yankees, Houston Astros TV analyst, host of the Believe in the Bronx podcast. And yeah, listen, you know, we always talk about sort of the media not mattering as much anymore because, frankly, there's less of us around. You know, the newspapers aren't, I mean, there's just not a lot of them anymore. And press boxes are getting smaller. But there is a market where the narrative still gets driven by the media. And it's New York and it's the Yankees. It's still, that's where it gets driven.
Yeah, you gotta
I don't
it.
Think the only other city where I think it that you can compare is Philadelphia.
Yep.
And even then Philadelphia, because the newspaper war in Philadelphia basically doesn't exist anymore. Philadelphia is not what it used to be. Boston's just kind of, I don't know how you describe Boston. There's a weird media vibe in Boston that I've never been able to figure out, but New York is still the place where, and the Yankees in particular, it's still a team where that matters. And again, I don't pretend to know how the hell the Yankees are, because he's going to want $500 million.
No question.
At least $500
million. He should want that.
He should want it. And
yep.
He should get it.
Yep.
I don't know how the hell the Yankees do it, but man, if you're the Yankees, if this thing works out as well as it looks like it does, and mm-hmm. you win the World Series, if you're the Yankees, how do you not sign? What do you say to Aaron Judge if you don't sign Juan Soto after he's finally
won? Who else are you spending it on?
Now you got Garrett Cole, who's got the option. But I just thought from the get-go that Juan Soto in pinstripes,
it's a perfect fit.
Just makes sense.
It is, yeah.
Just looks good.
Got an attitude, that how he takes pitches. Yeah. You don't like him. I mean, you could see how you wouldn't like him.
Oh yeah.
If you're a fan of another team,
oh, yeah.
Watching that, you're like mad.
When's the last time anybody really hated the Yankees?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it fun, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Baseball's
better for baseball.
Baseball's better when the Yankees are good and when they're just like and they're just like disliked a little bit.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been the case. That hasn't been the case for a long time. All right, that is it for us. There's no Blue Jays baseball tonight. Someone else is going to have to no-hit somebody in order to...
Be nice.
I am being nice. The Jays are back in the field tomorrow, 1:05 first pitch. Yankees home opener at Yankee Stadium. Spit it out, Jeff. We'll be on after the game with Blue Jays talk tomorrow. We go to the back leg line, 590-590 is the text line. Take your texts, take your calls. It'll be live on TV and live on the radio, so don't miss it. And we'll see you tomorrow.